Hi there, and welcome back to the Hello Personality podcast, where we dig deep into personality type to understand who we really are so that we can live each day with greater purpose and intention by focusing on what really matters. I'm Leslie McDaniel, and this is Season 5, Episode 7, and we're continuing to explore the concept of motivation through the lens of your mental wiring and the 16-type system of personality. If you're just now joining us this season, you can check out the introduction to this topic and the themes and patterns related to the cognitive functions in Episodes 1 and 2 of Season 5. We've already had a few guests this season to share their journey of understanding their personality type in the 16-type system and to discuss their relationship with motivation. No matter which type you identify with, there is a lot of gold in these conversations. Today, we have an ESFP guest joining us to share what it's really like to be an ESFP type. You may have heard me say this many times before, but there are a lot of misconceptions and stereotypes about many of the personality types in this system, but I believe that's particularly true about the ESFP and the many ways that the functions of this type can be expressed in real people. Why does it matter if people are mistyped or if stereotypes persist? Well, you know, I guess it really doesn't matter unless you want to use the depth of what your type and functions can offer you in understanding how to grow and develop. And if you're here, I'm pretty sure that description fits you. And we'll talk about that a little bit in our episode today with our guest about how life-changing this work can be. So let's learn a little bit about our ESFP guest. Inès is a French 30-year-old who grew up between three cultures. She identifies as an ESFP in the Myers-Briggs system and a self-preservation 2 in the Enneagram. In her career, Inès has always been passionate about people development. She has worked in the fields of HR, recruitment, and talent development. Since 2018, she's been training and practicing the art of conducting personality profiling sessions. She's worked with hundreds of clients from all over the globe and from all walks of life. She currently also works as the business manager for Personality Hacker. In her free time, she loves reading self-help and personal development books, traveling the world, trying out new foods, and enjoying quality time with her loved ones. So let's talk a little bit about the ESFP type before we get into that interview. This type corresponds to the cognitive function sequence of extroverted sensing, which we symbolize by SE, introverted feeling, symbolized by FI, extroverted thinking, which is TE, and introverted intuition, which is NI. We can draw some general patterns from all EP types, but one big one is the desire for freedom. And you'll hear Inès mention that a little bit, especially in relationship to her working style. With the ESP types, that is both ESFPs and ESTPs, there's a high level of adaptability to changing environments and situations. Because both of these types lead with an extroverted sensing function, they're also very comfortable being able to handle the unexpected without a lot of fanfare. And this is in contrast to the IJ personality types, whom you heard from earlier in the season, who do not handle the unexpected well. In fact, they do their very best to make sure that they don't have to handle something that they don't know or expect. The ESP types are very grounded in reality with their dominant sensing function, but they still use their inferior introverted intuition function. And Inès is going to talk to us quite a bit about that. And it may give the ESP an interest in something like psychology or philosophy or even the esoteric. As mentioned in the previous episodes, each of our guests prioritize their first four functions that are related to their type, but we can use all eight functions. So even if you're not an ESFP and you don't prioritize SE, FI, TE, and NI, you can still use this conversation as an opportunity to explore your own relationship to these functions. If you're wondering what I'm talking about when I mention the functions, or if you're confused by the abbreviations, I totally get it, and it can be like learning a whole new language. But I still encourage you to listen to this episode, and you can check out seasons 1 and 3, where I go over some of the basics of the functions, if you'd like. Because motivation is our theme this season on the podcast, Anessa and I will also talk about her relationship to motivation, what she's learned about what motivates her and what demotivates her, and especially drawing those connections to her personality type. All right, I'm really excited for you to hear this conversation. So let's go ahead and dive in with Aness. Hey, Aness, welcome to the Hello Personality Podcast. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to our conversation today. And I'd love to just start. I know a little bit about your story because I've heard you speak about your journey with type, but I'd love for you to share with the listener, what motivated you initially to even explore this personality system?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I actually, I started with all of this back at university. We had to take a test as part of a HR class that I took. And that is how I first did the 16 personality test, very standard, and got the INFJ response that a lot of people get as test results. So that was, that was the beginning of my journey. And I found it fascinating and just kind of went down the rabbit hole from there.
Yeah. So through your class, was there anything else in your life going on that you're like, oh, this could be a really helpful tool or knowledge?
So interestingly enough, I would say at that time when I took the test, maybe I got interested in it and I delved a little bit. I only really discovered the letters at that time. So there was only so much depth to what you could research and what, you know, the interest of it. So after a while, it kind of went away and it was something that was just fun to, you know, keep track on Pinterest or whatnot. And I would say it actually came back when I was a few years later. I was working in a big, big organization and I actually suffered from a burnout. And that's when I sort of had to pause and decide, okay, let me focus on myself. Let me try to figure some of these things out. And that's when I discovered the cognitive functions, when I discovered also Personality Hacker that I have been using their content a lot. So that's sort of how I got back into it after discovering it the first time around.
Yeah. So something like you're burnt out and you're like, I need to figure out my life. What's going on? Why am I feeling this way? Those types of things.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and figuring out the whole energy management piece, which is why I think at that time I identified as an introvert as well, you know, it gave me permission to go do introverted things and have introverted time.
So I think a lot of people of your type, you know, or any type that's not FE or extroverted feeling dominant, I think can think of themselves as introverts because it's not necessarily about being around a lot of people. It can be, but you know, it's, so I think it makes sense, especially if you're burnt out, to feel like you're an introvert. So now on the other side of this, you know, you're very knowledgeable, you know, you're a profiler yourself and you work with personality type all the time. What do you see as the biggest differences between INFJ and ESFP? They're very different types on the surface, but lots of people can relate to INFJ.
Yeah, I would say that's so true. You know, the letters are different. The functions, the cognitive functions are different of their wiring. Still, I think they have a lot in, they can have a lot in common, especially in how they would relate to these profiles, I think. I would say for me personally, but it's something I've seen with other ESFPs as well, I have a deep sensitivity. I'm more on the quiet side, even though I'm an extrovert. I'm definitely a little bit more on the quiet side, and I feel I definitely am aware of my introverted intuition, even though in the cognitive stack it's my last function. But I'm very aware, or I can see it when I use it. I notice it, and I'm attached to it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's sort of made me resonate with this profile of the INFJ. But I would say difference wise, for me, one of the biggest pieces that helped me understand some of this content better was just working with the real people of those types, right? And that's one of the amazing things. I mean, that's how I met you as well. Like the communities we're part of, that you really get to meet these people that actually use these functions. And that sort of opened my eyes to the way, for instance, my relationship with my introverted intuition, for instance, compared to you or compared to someone that has it as their first function, where I can really see this sort of discomfort with the planning in the really long term, this ability to make commitments for the future and feel very strongly about it, the ability to predict, you know, to guess, feel confident with concluding. I think those are all things that for me are really a struggle. And I would say that's a major difference that I see with the INFJs and the ESFPs is, I think on the ESFP side, more wanting to leave things open, wanting to verify things in, you know, in the real world, in the sensory world, not being as confident and comfortable, guessing, being decisive, being conclusive, that type of thing.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think one important thing you brought up was that last function of introverted intuition, or for anybody, you know, you and I have been in a class where we've learned about the influence of that function and how it can be the determining factor a lot of times, like how it shows up. Now, it definitely shows up, and it's definitely going to, like you said, you actually said you were attached to it in a lot of ways, or you can be. Can you, give us some examples of what that looks like for you?
Yes, I would say, I think one interesting pattern, and I think we have studied it in our class too, is this idea of how far do you have to go back to find the examples of that function, right? So for instance, for me, if I look at my childhood, I used the introverted intuition a lot in play, you know, a lot of times with my, I have a little sister, and I would make up imaginary worlds for us and imaginary creatures and imaginary everything. And that idea of my imagination, you know, it showed up a lot in literature classes, and I loved philosophy in high school, right? So that's what I mean with the attachment, that I feel very strongly about that part of myself. Yeah. It's an important part of me. And, you know, if we're seeing types in a more, you know, in a more put you in a box type of way, then it's, I think there's the danger of not seeing that as an important part of who, you know, who each of the types are. And it wouldn't feel complete without it, but it's not the main tool that I'm using in my day-to-day life to make important decisions, to live my adult life. Definitely not. It needs to be a safe container, safe spaces, small doses, playful times, that type of things.
Yeah. You said that, you took the words out of my mouth. I was going to say safe and playful and those types of things. It's in a small container. Nice. So what I'm hearing you say is that it's like your introverted intuition is showing up all the time, but it's not necessarily the thing that you're paying attention to or that you give the most weight in your life as you're, you know, thinking about the future. And also, first of all, is that true? Does that resonate with you, what I've shared?
Yes. And a lot of uncertainty, I would say. A lot of the way I see it show up a lot. And again, not just me, this is something we're seeing a lot with people of that have extroverted sensing as the first function, is there's a lot of doubting. There's a lot of doubting your own mind, doubting everything. I sometimes think every function is designed to do, you know, the opposite of the other side. So if introverted intuition is really good at the patterns and at sort of finding the patterns between things, I think extroverted sensing is good at finding all the counterexamples that destroy the pattern. That's amazing if you're, you know, in certain contexts, it's the right tool. If you think of, like, for instance, science, you want to be careful sometimes. You don't want to just go to a conclusion and think you already know. Or any field where you need to be really careful, it's the right tool. But in your own life, it means that whenever you have a conclusion, something you feel strongly about, something where you want to just say it's this and nothing else, always your mind is going to be like, but what about this? But what about that? which is very frustrating.
Yeah.
It's a very frustrating thing.
Yeah. I mean, I experienced that a little bit too with those functions in the middle, even though I think probably not as much as you're describing, but there can be that sense of like coming up with the examples or the exceptions to the pattern of like, well, this one time, you know, this thing happened. Even though I'm definitely, I'm definitely drawn more toward the pattern, and they're kind of like, I would say they niggle at my brain a little bit more than just totally overriding, like you're saying, like can keep you in that state of doubt and wondering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
And in some ways I would imagine too that you said it's frustrating, but do you kind of like that as well? Because it like keeps your options open and it helps you to not feel like pinned down. I don't know. You tell me.
Maybe unconsciously, probably.
Okay.
But the times that I'm describing where it's frustrating is the time where I'm trying to land.
Got it.
It's the times where I'm trying to decide, move forward, you know, plan my next steps. That's the times where it's frustrating because you're really working against your brain.
Yeah.
But then there's plenty of times in my day-to-day, for instance, an example of what you're asking of, you know, at times that I love it is I love that I don't make assumptions. Mm. Like I don't make assumptions when I meet someone for the first time. I don't think, oh, I already know about this person. Yeah. They remind me of this other person and I know now everything about them. Like it's such a blank page, you know, it's so like open, like could be anything, which also means you might fall for the same traps a few times. But that's a part that I really like, that openness, the openness to people, to experiences, to life.
Yeah,
so I'm good in it too.
I think you're probably demonstrating that SE or extroverted sensing now, even in just like bringing up the examples, the generalized examples of the times when you are actually frustrated by having a lot of options, even though there are times as well when you said that it's good. And in that way, like extroverted sensing, seeing every experience as its own, like importance. Does that feel true for you?
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I sometimes say there is something with SE where you just take things in. You just take them in. You know, I have some friends that have more intuition and they're always impressed that I can, if you and I just had a conversation and later someone asked me, oh, how was the interview with Leslie? I can say exactly what we talked about and what you said and what I said and almost if someone then goes and watches it, it's the same thing, which is great, but it makes for a bit of a cluttered mind because you're just taking so much in and you don't try to categorize them in these, you know, these introverted intuition, nice organized like buckets.
Categories, yeah.
Categories.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's awesome. So with your SE, your extroverted sensing, it's very open and it helps you to approach each new experience like a new experience, it sounds like.
Yes.
And what other ways does that show up in your life, the extroverted sensing?
Ooh. I would say, so one other aspect I could think of from extroverted sensing is the realism.
Mm.
So I think my brain immediately goes to, Is it realistic or not? If someone tells a story, I can know very quickly whether that seems to add up in reality or not. But most importantly, I don't even use it so much for this. But for instance, I use it a lot. It's very helpful in work or in business where I can know, is something realistic? How much time will it take roughly? Sort of that connection to reality, that connection to groundedness. I stay close to what actually happens or what actually happened, and I use that to make my future predictions. So that is I think a big aspect of extroverted sensing is that sense of realism, that groundedness sort of thing. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think even then, like your introverted intuition, if I can point out, maybe I'm wrong here, but it's playing a role because you're looking at the pattern, the overall pattern of like this type of thing, whatever it is not likely to happen in real life. And it's because you have all those sensory experiences in real life to draw upon. So, so those two functions working together, seeing the pattern.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. It's easier to do when you have real world experience with that thing.
Yeah.
Right? So even working with person, you and I both work with personalities, and doing this type of work with, but for me, this work has gotten so much easier the more people that I met. Like, I really needed the real examples of people in real life using these functions. And that helps me download the patterns at a much deeper level. And I can learn theoretical. I have no problem learning theoretical. I just lose a lot of fidelity if I can't map it to reality, to real people in the real world.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Having to have those real experiences, like for you, it's critical to be able to do the guess, so to speak, or to see the pattern, the introverted intuition.
Yes.
Yeah, whereas people who have it higher are much more comfortable just throwing out, oh, I think it's this, without a lot of evidence sometimes. So we've talked about your first and your last function and functions in your cognitive function sequence. And so let's talk a little bit about the two in the middle. And that would be introverted feeling for your second function and extroverted thinking for your third. And for most people, these are more conscious, you know, these functions are, we can kind of see them play out in our lives more. So I'm curious for you, like, you can either give me examples or experiences or patterns, either one, of how they show up in your life.
Yeah. I resonate a lot with that idea that they're more conscious, that you see them more. So my second function, introverted feeling, the way that I experience it is I feel very, very connected to my emotions. I have a lot of emotions. They're very deep. They're very intense. And I know very quickly the way that I feel about everything. So if you put me in a new place, I can tell you whether I like it or not very quickly, with foods, with people. Like, I have very strong likes and dislikes and immediate, you know, which feels like intuition, but in this case, it's very emotion based. It's very much on how something hits me emotionally, and I'm very connected to that. I'm very sensitive. I feel things very intensely with people or with movies, with anything that is, you know, that moves your emotions. I would say what I love about it is sort of this the fierce independence that it gives me, that it's sort of this walking the beat of your own drum function, you know, where it gives me the freedom to decide for myself what I care about, what I value. You know, I am trying to be very intentional, for instance, in where I put my time, you know, what matters to me. And so those are things that I really, really value and appreciate about that function, that it sort of has that bit of moral compass inside of it. Yeah. And it helps me stay in tune and in alignment with who I am and who I want to be. And also gives me feedback on, like, you know, you're not actually being the person that you want to be. Mm-hmm. You need to course correct, that style of things.
Yeah.
And it makes, I think it's a function that's very genuine. It's a function that appreciates people just being themselves, you know, and so I try to be as much myself as I can be, but also I can hold a lot of space for people to, I care a lot about individuality. I care a lot about everyone being their own person and having the space to do that. That's very important to me. I would say on the not so fun side of this function, it comes with the intensity, right? So the emotions, you know, it can be very high highs and low lows. And I think the emotions can be very loud. So that can be a challenge, and they can cloud things sometimes, right? So that's one of the things that I see is the benefit of the thinker types, that they have sort of this ability to really think clearly, even when they're difficult situations, and that's where I see, you know, sometimes the emotions can make things or decisions, it's very hard to take the emotional component out of it.
Yeah.
But overall, I would say it's a function that's given me a lot, and it's been very good to be in tune with in my stack.
Yeah.
And then on the opposite side, the extroverted thinking one is the opposite of introverted feeling. It's and that's more the side of myself that I see that is, I love working in teams.
Mm-hmm.
I love watching people achieve things like that is very, I love, you know, I was thinking about it the other day that I will watch things like those survivor shows, you know, mm-hmm. like the world's toughest race yeah. or something. I just love watching people push through challenges, overcome boundaries to make something happen. So I get so inspired by people all the time, by, you know, entrepreneurs like you and coaches and people that are there to make an impact. And that's very inspiring to me. And it's something I get a lot of energy from it. And then I want to also do better and impact people and touch their lives. And so that's that part of me, I would say. And obviously a bit of a, I have a mini business woman inside of me that's, you know, that is connected to that part. Where it gets in the way is busyness. Like it's with those, my two extroverted functions, it can get into being a busy bee and overloading the schedule and taking on too many things. That can be a challenge, and it can be, I would say some of these things. It can be get a bit lost in the work as well. You know, prioritize that and really lose yourself in work and kind of lose touch with how you're actually feeling and what you need and that sort of thing. But but I love these functions in the middle.
Yeah.
They're very helpful.
Yeah. I love how you also described the like so-called good part and then the bad part, you know, if we want to put it in that dichotomy of but the, you know, the upside and the ways that it can also show up in not so good ways. Because I think that's true for all of us to recognize in our lives, you know, and that's the whole point, in my opinion, of understanding ourselves through the lens of this personality system and our functions is really understanding where we're imbalanced and understanding, you know, like where we're acting unconsciously and, you know, where we're acting in ways that don't align with who we want to be, as you described with your introverted feeling. And it just, you know, it's kind of like a tool, as you've said before, a shortcut, a framework to run that through. And so, yeah, it's not all like, oh, it's beautiful. There are some dark sides to the functions, and recognizing those helps us to kind of integrate them, I think, of like you were saying, when you get pulled into the business, recognizing, wait, does this actually align with who I want to be and what really matters to me? Your introverted feeling. So I would imagine as an extrovert, you do kind of feel that pull towards the extroverted thinking because it's oriented towards the external world. Does that feel true?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, I would say, yes, I think it's a function that I like to say with our third function that it can get loud.
Mm.
You know, it's a loud function. It has very strong opinions about, you know, how much productivity I should have in a day and what I should get done and whether or not I'm meeting my goals. And it has a lot to say. And it gets very impatient by the slow pace of emotions. Emotions are so slow. So when you have emotions to resolve or things that come up or things you even not to resolve, but even figure out how you feel, it takes a long time. And I think that's something that can be a struggle for the extroverted type.
Absolutely.
Yeah, in the system.
Yeah. So you're talking about your introverted feeling and having really deep and intense emotions and that your emotions are loud. And I'm wondering if, you know, since this is an introverted function, I'm wondering, is that visible to other people? Do they know how deeply you're experiencing something? Can they see that on you? Like, how does that work for you?
Ooh, you know, Leslie, that's a good question because I can answer it in both ways. I think in the sense that I think what I feel is very visible a lot of the time. So they sometimes, you know, friends have made fun of me that I don't have enough of a poker face, that, you know, if I feel something, you will see it. So in that sense, I would say maybe it's hard to hide it. Probably the exception would be a certain TE context, a certain extroverted thinking context. So for instance, work would be one of those fields where it's very easy for me to push down the emotion because of that conscious access, right? So we can go and decide which one we're using. And I would say in a work context, it's very extremely rare that I would get emotional as an example, because I know this is a place where we're here to do work and we're here to get things done. And that is what, you know, my extroverted thinking third function really understands and has integrated, or like has strong things to say about. So that would be an example, I think, where I would be less wearing my emotions on my sleeves than in my personal life, for instance.
I wonder too, and I don't know if this is true, but I wonder if it could be a little bit of like with your extroverted sensing, your SE, like what's present for you and that is real. And maybe in those ways, and I don't know if that's related, but it seems like it could be of like, this is what's real and true for me right now. So it's going to come up and it might be visible and it might not, unless there's that real conscious control from your extroverted thinking as you're describing. Does that track with you at all?
Yeah, that tracks. And I would say that's such a good way to put it. That's probably the answer is, I think my emotions are quite visible unless I put conscious control over them.
Yeah.
And if I do, we know how the extrovert thinking works. It's very good at pushing down emotions. So it's a very useful tool when you need it. But overall, day to day, probably tend to wear my emotions more on my sleeves, for sure.
Yes. I guess I'm always interested in kind of making the distinctions between the extroverted version of feeling, or FE, extroverted feeling, and introverted feeling. So I think the key here would be just still that they are your emotions. They're your very personalized emotions. They may be influenced by things that are happening in the external world, but they're really still pinging off of something that matters to you, something that's hitting you inside. Does that feel true?
That feels true for sure. And I would say that the fact that people can see my emotions, to revisit your question, I don't know that they per se will see the depth of it. They will see the emotion. They will see the surface expression of the emotion, but may not know how deep or how intense that experience is for me internally at that time. So yeah, that's a really good distinction. I think also extroverted feeling has this concept of appropriateness, right? So usually it's very easy to understand why this emotional experience happens in that moment, because it's extroverted. It's very responsive to the needs of the moment emotionally. And I think introverted feeling is so much more personal, subjective. And so therefore, something could hit me emotionally that makes no sense to the rest of the world. Yeah. I remember going with my sister to the movie Wild. It's one of my favorite movies. Mm-hmm. But we went to the cinema and I think I cried from the beginning to the end. And she turned around, she said, "Do we need to leave?" I didn't think so. It was a great experience. But, you know, it's disproportionate compared to, you know, just getting emotional about a movie. That's a normal emotional response. But when it hits so deep that it doesn't always make sense, I think, to the to the outside world.
I mean, I absolutely have that experience too. It's like, why am I crying so hard at this? And it's like, it's like, I know, you know, having done a lot of this work, is that, you know, it's pinging, as I was saying, on something in me. There's a deep pain or something in me that it's resonating with. And that's where the emotion's coming from. But yeah, to other people, they may be like, what is going on with you?
Then you understand. Yes, this is
absolutely,
this is the joys of introverted feeling. Yes.
Absolutely. So I want to talk a little bit about, like, now that you know all this information, you know yourself very well. I think you probably knew yourself well even before understanding your functions, but now you kind of can see how all those parts of you are working together. Like, what impact, like what tangible or practical impact has this information, this knowledge, this understanding had in your life or your relationships or your work or any of those areas?
Yeah. Yeah. I love this question because I don't like to use this sentence because it's so overused, but it changed my life. It really did.
Yeah.
It really did. I would say being aware of these parts of yourself, having the awareness, that the consciousness, you know, to see them the way that they act, to understand, you know, when do you get triggered? When do you get in a loop or grip or any of those mechanisms that are built into the personality type? I think it helps to, you know, they say there is this, there is the stimuli and the response. And I think what tools like the Myers-Briggs personality system do is it gives you a bit more space between the thing that happens and your response to it. It gives you more of an element of choice. And that doesn't mean you always have a choice, right? Sometimes, like we saw it earlier in the interview, I will do extroverted sensing even when I don't realize that I'm doing it and I'm still doing it. But it gives you that, yeah, that choice. So I would say that's on a personal level. I love the knowing this. It feels more, you feel more in control. You feel more like you're the captain of your own ship. You understand how your mind works and you understand, you know, how to leverage it, how to use it for growth, how to, you know, what to do when your energy is low, what to do when you get stressed, all these very practical things. And you know your blind spots also, so that when things come in your blind spots, when things come from those more shadow parts of yourself, that you're not as taken aback. It's not as, because you are aware that there are areas there that you don't spend as much time in, or you're not as conscious of.
Yeah.
So I would say that's definitely on a personal level, and that's part of why I love these communities, is being surrounded by people that are going through the same journey, also use this tool for their own growth, for to be more conscious, to become better versions of themselves. That's meant a lot to me to be able to connect with people that are on that journey as well. On an interpersonal level, I think it's huge to understand. I think the biggest concept is understanding not everyone has your driver function. And it sounds so simple, but it's really, really not. It's really the water in which we swim. We don't understand or realize how much we're doing it.
Yeah.
And to understand that other people are not coming from that place. And other people, maybe when there's a miscommunication, maybe when feelings are hurt, maybe when something doesn't work the way that it was planned. Sometimes it's intentional, of course, but also where can this tool give you more compassion to understand really where the other person is coming from and how to meet them better, how to meet them where they're at. I think that's huge in how we can use this tool. For sure.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's like I'm in 100% agreement. It's like you're taking the words all out of my mouth, and I'm sitting here, you know, taking notes to remind myself of what you've shared. And I wrote down compassion and empathy, because I think that this understanding, whether we're using this system or something else, but just something that helps you understand the way you're wired, the way someone else is wired, breeds so much more compassion and empathy and understanding of, like,
yeah.
Okay, yeah, I may not like their behavior, but it probably makes sense for some level of their functions or some version of their functions. It may not always be the healthiest version. And then back to what you're saying at the beginning about creating that space between the stimulus and the response. Mm-hmm. I've said that so many times. Like, it gives you, you know, this self-awareness is what it boils down to. It gives you that conscious ability to make a choice of, like, how do I want to react right now? Like, we can't really, you know, many times we can't control the kind of instinct, like feeling or sensation or maybe even belief that comes up, but we can control our actions, the way that we, the resulting way that we respond to it. And I think that would be more responsive rather than being reactive. So yeah, consciousness is huge, I think, for the work that I do and the work I do with my clients. Living a more conscious life is just a more enjoyable, more fulfilling, more beautiful life, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And even in the compassion aspect, what you were saying, Leslie, what came up for me is also the, it's not just understanding people don't do what you do so well. It's also having compassion for their last function, yeah, and their experience of the three-year-old, because maybe their last function is something that's very easy for you. And that sometimes it's people's behavior in that sense can be almost like baffling, or why are you making such a big deal out of it? Or why is this, why don't you just dot, dot, dot? And it just teaches us to hold a lot more space for these kind of judgments, because we have no idea how, you know, how something that maybe seems simple from the outside, maybe is the biggest deal for that person. Yeah. Maybe that's the hardest thing in their natural wiring to conquer and to overcome. Yeah. So,
yeah. I think what you're saying brings up the idea of courage for me, in that doing any of this personal development work, you know, if we're willing to look into the shadowy parts of ourselves, or the parts that are more difficult to accept, that maybe aren't our natural flow states, like that takes a lot of courage. And even if someone is having an experience and they're allowing themselves to have an experience of their inferior or a part of themselves that's not super comfortable. I think that's, for me, that's beautiful, because it's evidence of someone who's really trying to allow themselves to experience all parts of themselves. Now, it doesn't always show up in really mature ways, but I think, I don't know, I guess maybe this is partly coming from my type too, but, and my experiences in life, but there can be so much pushing down of natural parts of ourselves that,
right.
Actually, we need to pay attention to, you know?
Yes.
Or even as women, I don't know if you experience this, but, you know, there's a sense that we should behave in a particular way, or that we are too emotional, or we're this or that. And in reality, like, that can breed a lot of, like, oh, well, I can't be emotional because then people don't take me seriously, and that kind of stuff. So again, I know a lot of this is coming from my own type, but I think, allowing ourselves to, I guess I'm just rambling on about the same topic, but allowing ourselves to see fully who we are and do this work and become more conscious, I think gets us to our truest selves.
Yes. And it, I don't think it's just your type. I think there's so many women going through this type of messaging of the way you are supposed to be, and not matching that sort of template, that I think it's important to mention it for sure.
Yeah. Thankfully, it doesn't really impact me as much anymore, but when I was growing up and younger, a younger woman for sure. Mm. I'd like to spend a little bit of time shifting gears and talking about motivation, since that's the theme this season on the podcast. And we've kind of talked about some things already that, you know, motivate you when we got to your introverted feeling. But I first want to ask, like, how often is the idea of motivation on your mind? Like, are you, how much are you thinking about your own motivation and whether or not you're motivated?
Yes. I would say I've, of course, been thinking more consciously about it since I knew you were doing these podcasts. But so I don't know that I think about it in the concept, but I would say, for sure, it's something that's on my radar. I think especially in, you know, I do, I work remotely in my current role, and, you know, get a lot of freedom and flexibility to set my own goals, to, you know, be them personal or professional. And I think motivation plays a really key role. It's you know, I see the lifestyle you have as well. It's like, it's a lot of, you know, self-driven motivation that you need to generate in order to be able to be productive and accomplish things. And so that it's definitely a topic that I'm very interested in, at least use on a practical level. Try to use on a day-to-day basis for sure.
So paint us a picture, a description of what Ines is like when she's super motivated. Like, what's happening in your life? What are you feeling? What are you thinking? What's going on? What are you doing?
Yes, I would say, so when I'm motivated, I would say I am definitely, the first thing that comes up for me is like sharper thinking. Mm. I'm more decisive. I'm more action oriented. I don't postpone. I don't wait to make things happen. I feel great. I feel like I can do anything. I feel this sense of momentum, and I feel like once the momentum is there, you can ride it for a very long time. And then it's sort of this cycle, right? Because once you start being on this momentum and you start achieving things, then that gives you a positive feedback loop, and then you continue on that, and then it gives you feelings of being proud. And I would say motivation also comes with something giving. Like there's something that's you, if you're in that energy of, you know, this action, this momentum, I think you also have a lot to give. Mm-hmm. So I also feel, for me, it's, and I think I've seen this with people, that it's associated with this lovingness, this idea of, I want to contribute. I want to help. I have a lot to offer. I have a lot of energy. I have a lot of ideas. I have a lot of creativity. So I would say, yeah, those are some of the ways that shows up for me.
Yeah. Sure. And what are the conditions needed to, for that type of an S to show up, for that version of an S?
So I think, I would say, for me, a lot of times it starts with inspiration. Mm. So it starts with, I love Tony Robbins. I am obsessed with the content of Tony Robbins. I've been to live events and things like that. So, you know, he will be someone that if I listen to him or if I go to his events, like I can get, you know, really strong momentum from that. Or it can be something someone said on a podcast, on a book. It can be someone in real life, maybe watching someone's story, and I feel very moved. But a lot of times it starts with that inspiration or someone in my life that says something that shifts something in my mind. That's usually, I would say, the starting point of motivation. It is important for me to sort of have somewhere that I'm going, like a sense of direction, even if it's like for a project that I just know what's the end goal and can visualize it and work towards that. That's important.
Yeah.
And it helps me a lot when I have, I definitely am someone that needs the encouragement, the support, the people that say we believe in you.
Yeah.
So that's a big factor too. If I feel that I have that support system around me, then I feel so much stronger and like I can accomplish a lot. So
yeah,
those are some of the ingredients for sure.
Yeah. I would say a lot of what you shared at the beginning of that question, that what are the conditions, relates to your introverted feeling, like the inspiration, like that is what you're talking about. It's something that personally for you is like, oh, that's so inspiring. Does that feel true for you?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure. The feelings, absolutely. The more intense, the better. And a lot of times that will be positive. That will be going towards something compelling, something exciting. Excitement is a really big motivator for me. But sometimes I have to say, sometimes motivation can be running away from something that you really don't want to have happen. And sometimes the urgency that comes from that can also be a driver, I would say. Fear, unfortunately, it works.
Absolutely,
To motivate oneself. So sometimes if I notice that, or sometimes maybe if I don't know what the positive thing is that I'm working towards, then at least using fear to get emotion typically works.
Yeah. I talked about that in the first episode this season about how being motivated away from something and being motivated towards something, like they can both be motivators. And then you also mentioned, I don't think you said the word purpose, but I wrote down purpose and direction. And I think you were talking about it in terms of extroverted thinking or TE, of like a project and kind of knowing this is my end goal. This is what I'm going to accomplish. But do you find that your introverted intuition, like having something that you feel that you're moving towards a vision?
Yes.
You're nodding.
It's the biggest gift that anyone can give to someone with introverted intuition as their last function is a positive vision. Mm-hmm. Like it's really, you know, because then it, like this part of me gets activated and I get so pulled towards this positive thing in the future. But I have to say, a lot of the times I maybe need a little nudge or a little bit of help to create that positivity but the more that the introverted intuition is involved, especially for bigger projects or bigger things, then the better, because the imagination gets activated. I'm very visual, so visualizing things, imagining things vividly. A few years ago, I moved to the city. I was living more in a small town, and I decided to move back to the city. And I think for a month, in my head, I already lived in the city. I was visualizing it all the time, and I was imagining exactly the place where I would live. And sometimes there's a little bit of immaturity there, where if then the result doesn't match what I had imagined, I can be very disappointed. But yeah. I would say it was a very odd feeling then to actually move and to have to reconcile, because it felt like it had already happened, which... I am totally showing off my last function, because that is not how I work most of the time.
Yeah.
But in that instance, when I could use it, it was very powerful for sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm like, you're speaking to me like that's where I call myself an idealist, because I do. I constantly have a vision of, you know, even just going on a trip or something, and I've already lived it before I've gotten there. And then when I get there, it's not nearly as good as the vision in my mind pretty much ever. So I experienced that as well. Something you had mentioned when we started talking about that was that if someone else gives you a vision, and so it was almost like you were talking about it like outside of yourself. So I'm wondering, like for yourself, I know we're getting back to the functions a little more, but like, do you find that you are motivated by your own sense of purpose and direction, or does it have to come from outside of you?
So far, I'm 30 years old, but so far in life, I have found I do need some help. Yeah. I do need some help with, and it, in the end, it will be my vision, it will be my path, but I do need some help with narrowing that down from certain friends in my life. My sister, my little sister is great at this function. It can be, you know, coaches or you know, anyone that is in that sort of counseling role. But especially because I think if one of the things my introverted intuition is very good at is the negative scenario and coming up with the negative, scary path. And so sometimes I don't have the sophistication to be able to get myself out of that and into a more positive vision for the future. But it's a gift, because, and I don't know if other people experience this with their thrill, but it's almost like I didn't expect I could, I didn't, to me this function was always, it feels fatalistic, like it was always going to be negative. And when suddenly I can associate the future with something positive, it's such a different experience of life. It's so, it opens up so many possibilities.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
gosh, I'm having an insight right now, and I need some more time to process it, but I'm just going to share what's coming up for me. And what you're sharing is that, you know, as inferior introverted feeling, and of course, I identify as a type four, a self-preservation type four. Mm-hmm. So just much like you described earlier, like I've had a very, you know, I love my introverted feeling, and it's been there my whole life. Definitely in that relationship in this system, like the inferior, but, you know, as a four, I've always said, you know, sadness is an undercurrent in my life and has always been. Like, that's the one emotion, maybe not the one emotion, it's the emotion that I feel most comfortable with. And it's the one that, you know, I've experienced, like, mostly in my life. So I never thought about it in terms like this. I'm wondering if that is part of, in this system, that inferior of, like, really latching on to that one emotion. And, you know, joy is part of my work, like experiencing contentment and joy and satisfaction. All these things are part of my work as a four, and recently started experiencing a lot more joy in my life. And what you just said is like so true about how it's such a different experience of life of, you know, before, and this is true, I think, for a lot of fours, that joy feels or even happiness feels fleeting, and it almost feels a bit dangerous of like, oh, it's not going to last, that type of experience. And even kind of like feeling the sadness on the other side of the happiness or joy of like knowing that it's going to result in that. So I'm just processing through out loud right here in the moment. But I think what you've just said, that might be another like nugget of understanding of me for like my two types working together, which I've spent so much time processing to make sure, am I actually a four, you know, as an ENTJ and a self-preservation four? And there's so many overlaps actually, as I've done my work, but yeah, I don't know. I think that that might be, there might be something there with the sadness and the connection to that one emotion. Yeah.
That's beautiful. And I love the, you know, I wonder, Leslie, if it has to do with that we're scared of getting hurt in that function. So it's almost like for you and for me, right, that's for you, maybe it's like, what if you allow yourself to have these positive feelings and then they go away, or then it's not safe, or then, right? And I have the same. It's like, what if I allow myself to have these positive visions or imagine a bright future, and then in the end, it doesn't work out that way, and I will get so hurt and not be able to cope with the negativity in that last function. I wonder if that's maybe an instinct to protect that very vulnerable part of ourselves. But
absolutely, it makes sense.
I think,
to
what
me.
A gift if we can open ourselves up, right? In that way, like,
absolutely. Yeah, I think there's something there. It's interesting. Have to keep processing it since we both have those. We have both have introverted intuition. It's a slow processor.
Yes.
It takes a while for those insights to really bubble up and feel solid anyway. Yeah. So we talked about like what motivates you and what you look like when you're motivated. What demotivates you? What zaps your energy and motivation?
Yes, that's a really good one. For sure, I need the good vibes around me. So things that destroy the good vibes around me, like criticism, like being put down. I would say I can do competition for a little bit, but it drains me if I'm in a very, and that's, I think that's not per se representative of everyone in my type. I think it depends how you use your functions.
Yeah.
But for me, it's something that really drains me. So if I'm in a hyper competitive environment where it doesn't feel like we're a team, where it doesn't feel like we're working together towards something constructive, that can be very difficult. It can feel, I do have to say that the long-term aspect can be demotivating. So if I don't see real results, if I don't see some sense of progress, like stagnation is so demotivating to me. Stagnation, or I have to remember this concept of the delay, right? That when you take actions, there's a delay before you actually reap the results. And sometimes, I mean, that concept sounds simplistic, but sometimes the delay can be even a few years before you even see the results of the seeds that you planted. And that's difficult, because it's easy for me to go into, okay, I need to change strategy. This isn't working. I'm not seeing that this is working. That can be challenging. Actually, to go full circle, I think some of the things we were describing at the beginning with the doubts, the indecision, that can be very demotivating too. So if I'm on a momentum, if I'm going somewhere, if I'm on a track, and then if my mind starts playing tricks on me and be like, are you really sure though? Is that really where, like, if think of all these counter examples, that can also sort of, you know, take away my momentum.
So what I'm hearing a little bit is some of that one-sided, if your extroverted sensing or SE is one-sided, like there can be impatience of like the immediate, like I need to see it right now, and wanting to try something new. As you said, I know other SE dumps have the same problem, and I've worked with some where it's like want to quickly change strategies or change tactics, which probably is your SE, your extroverted sensing, and your extroverted thinking working together. Like, you know, Yeah. So yes. when that function is working in a more one-sided way, when you are feeling impatient, that sounds, and also don't have, I totally lost my train of thought, but it sounds like when that's working in a more one-sided way, that's pretty demotivating to you. Does that mm-hmm. sound true?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I would say so. And interestingly enough, I wonder if some of it is that the SE or the extroverted sensing jumps in also when there isn't enough newness, mm-hmm. when there isn't enough excitement. That's also demotivating. Gosh, yes.
The same old
routines, yeah. doing the same old thing. Oh, I can do it. But, yes, that's...
same.
that's difficult over time, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. And yeah. I would imagine, too, on the flip side of your introverted feeling, like if it's not personally meaningful, something around that, like I would imagine that's not motivating for you as well, right? Like...
Yes. Yeah. It's a very frustrating thing with the introverted feeling function that it's something you have to love it or you have to get it on board. Mm. Otherwise, it's just hijacking things. So if what's very difficult is when something makes sense to do, when it makes sense and you know you need to do it, but your feelings are not on board.
Yeah.
It's like trying to walk on water or something. It's just... It's such a pointless exercise. You might as well stop and spend the time to get your feelings on board.
Yes.
To get some sort of... I'll give you a simple example. I think for so many years, I was... Which is interesting, actually, as the stereotype of ESFPs. I was not so great with sports. I didn't have a good relationship with sport. I didn't have a good association. Mm-hmm. You know, the way sports is taught. I come from France. The way we teach it in schools is really outdated. It's not fun. Mm. So... didn't have a great association with that and didn't consider that important. And so the only reason you would have to work out, to go and exercise, all these things is the extroverted thinking. It makes sense. You know, you need to do it. It's good for you. Blah. There's all these reasons. It comes in one ear. It comes out the other ear. It doesn't do nothing to me. But something shifted again with those Tony Robbins conference. But at some point, something shifted and I found this. This is introverted feeling. I recommend to anyone that you need to find the part of your identity that associates with that. And yeah. So there is a part of me that is this health freak and mm-hmm. loves eating healthy. And, da, da, da. And then I created this image of like, ooh, I would love to be that person yeah. that like exercises and goes and... Ever since, it's never been a problem. Mm. If I fall off the routine, I'm back in a few weeks. Like, I'm back. It's been such a big part of my life since. Because the feelings are on board and the identity is on board. And then, yeah, it's just doing the thing. But yeah, that's sometimes you need to push yourself through. But it's nothing like if you don't have that, if you don't think this is a part of you, I cannot make it happen.
Yeah.
I admire it that people can.
Yeah. No, I love that. Yeah. It's such a great advice. And I think even for me, like I've definitely noticed like there are so many times where I'm like, I just don't feel like it. you know, when I'm in touch with my FI and it's like, it's very difficult. I think I probably have maybe a little more access to make myself do the things that I don't want to do. But yeah, there are times, especially if there's no external like... expectation or something on the other end of it, you know, like someone's not waiting on something, man, it is so hard for me to push myself. But that's, it's beautiful advice to find the part of me or the part of whomever's listening that can resonate with that. Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you, Ines.
Of course.
Yeah. So as we wrap up, I know you touched a bit on stereotypes. I'd love for you to just share like what are some of the stereotypes of ESFP that you would love to bust today?
I have so many. Yes. How much time do we have? I would say, I mean, it's something, and you and I have talked about this, Leslie, I feel very passionate about it. I feel very passionate about, I would say stereotypes in general mm-hmm. and the way that they box people. And I think one of the things that makes me the most mad is when people therefore cannot find their best fit type and cannot right. get everything you and I just talked about for the, you know, the last hour of our conversation of how much we gain from these systems, how much they've changed our lives. And it makes me mad if people cannot experience this just because stereotypes get in the way, just because that even, you know, when I considered, when I was trying to find my type, would never have considered an extroverted type. Yeah. By any stretch of the imagination, you know, you've been around me in person. I talk a lot now because we're on an interview, but I'm very low key. I'm very, but I don't talk that much. I'm quite quiet. So not your stereotypical extrovert. And with ESFPs, there are so many stereotypes. I would say that all of us are great athletes, great with our bodies, super, super physical, super sporty, super athletic, all these different things. That's mm-hmm. one. That they're all life of the party, loud performers, attention seeking, like very, very, this idea of very extroverted, the cheerleader type or something mm-hmm. like that. And then I would say a big one is also around intelligence. Yeah. And I think it's important to talk about it, that there is this idea, first of all, that intelligence is more an intuitive trait than a sensing trait. And then there is the idea of that if you have introverted intuition as your last function, if you have extroverted sensing as your first function, then surely you must not be very bright. Okay, so of course, for me personally, I don't identify with that at all. Right. I've always had really good grades in school. I always did academia. I was going to do a PhD because academia was just my thing. I loved it. I've always done well in work. Like, learning is so easy for me. Mm-hmm. I read a book, I pick it up. It's not hard at all. Of course, there's different styles of intelligence. Of course, if you put me in a room full of the NT personality types that talk about space, I'm maybe going to be lost, you know, but now I'm talking about myself, but I would say this has been my experience. I mean, you also have this, right? I've worked with so many ESFPs yeah. and so many, and ESTPs as well, but especially ESFPs that get drawn to this system and the interest in psychology. And it has not been my experience that these stereotypes are true. Right. Not even a little bit. No. I think I have found maybe one ESFP that sort of neatly fit into this box. But for the rest, you know, I've extroverted sensing in all walks of life, all fields of work. Yeah. You know, that groundedness, that real, like, all extroverted sensing is a form of learning. It's a form of taking information, and it's yeah. taking information by making sure that you're grounded, making sure you're realistic, making sure you check your sources. That doesn't, and through a lot of observation, it doesn't make it it doesn't make it less smart or anything like that. And I have to say a little bit, maybe you have this, you have encountered this as well, Leslie, is anything around I think so many people have, for instance, sensory sensitivity.
Yes.
Sensitivity to noise, to sounds, to right. Lights. And we live in a world that is overwhelming, I think, as well. I think a lot of people are tired and stressed and burnt out. And I think we have to remember that when a function is in your car and is in your stack, you have it. Look how much, you know, I just talked about introverted intuition. You talked about introverted feeling. They're important parts of who you are. And so if you have this function in your stack, you will experience these things.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter where in your stack it is. And just because you're experiencing these things, and you're clumsy or you're not great with your body or you forget things, it doesn't mean that you're not having this function as a driver. And yeah. I think, I hope people give themselves the chance to explore it, at least to explore the possibility of being these different types, because once you can get past the stereotypes, gosh, the depth of insight you can get about yourself, about your life, about people around you is is something I hope people don't get blocked by stereotypes.
Yeah.
No. I told you I was passionate about this.
I mean, I love it because I am as well. I mean, I'm so passionate about this. Why I'm asking the question, you know, it's like, yes. And I love all the things you shared. I'm in 100% agreement with what you've said. You know, I think the intelligence piece is huge and it's like it keeps persisting, even though I think it's been talked about many times. You know, at PH, mm-hmm. our personality hacker, we talk about the different ways that each type is intelligent or the different ways that different things that each type brings. But I think in the world, there's something about, I want to be an intuitive because they're somehow more special or more smart. Yeah. And for you, I think you're very intelligent and you speak multiple languages. Like you are able to learn a lot more than I probably am with my functions. But yeah. So thank you for bringing all of those up. And I hope that maybe there's an ESFP or EP listening, ESP listening, who hasn't considered this type before. And also the inferior extroverted sensing that all INJs have. You were talking about the sensitivity to external stimuli. Like I know people of having that function in all four positions who have sensitivity to external things. Like I'm a highly sensitive, I don't use that phrase, but I'm highly sensitive as well. And I'm not an INFJ.
And I think it's so good that you have this platform too, because people can also share their experiences if you are an extroverted sensing dominant, you know, that to share, like, I'm a bookworm. I love reading. Here's something you won't find in the stereotypes of an ESFPs, but actually most of the ones that I've interviewed are the same because what's reading, it's the sensory and you go and take it in for yourself.
And probably a safe place too to have that imagination of creating the world in your mind of what you're reading. All right. Well, Ines, thank you so much for such a beautiful conversation and appreciate you being here. So take care.
Thank you, Leslie. Yes, it's been so fun to be on here and thank you for being such a great interviewer and asking so many good questions. And I really hope it was valuable, and I'm very excited to see this series about motivation. I think it's a theme that's very relevant and can help a lot of people. So awesome. Very cool.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
All right. You
too. All right. That was such a beautiful conversation with Ines and a beautiful representation of what the ESFP type can look like and her cognitive functions. I really loved the way Ines helped us to expand our understanding of how an ESFP can show up, helped us bust some stereotypes around what it means to be an extrovert, and what it means to lead with extroverted sensing. She also brought up a lot of really great points about the inferior function, and that really does play a role in our life. And I'm sure you've heard me say this before, but you know, back in the day when I was first learning about personality type, I thought that inferior function was something that we really never looked at or that it really didn't play a role in our life. But in real people, Ines and I and those that we've been in class with and have studied this together, we've discovered that's just not true. It's just a little bit different relationship and a different energy, as she talked about. Some of the themes we saw around her type as an ESFP and an EP were her desire for freedom and options, but also then seeing times when she doesn't want a lot of options and she really wants to narrow in. But in that way, in the way she described it, her being able to see kind of each individual experience as holding the same amount of importance and prioritizing that, what she can learn from reality over the pattern that she might have, but still having patterns in her life and needing a lot of real life experience, a lot of extroverted sensing experience in order to form those patterns and to trust them. We saw some themes related to each of her functions and SE being motivated a lot by new experiences, FI being motivated by things that she feels deeply about or that she has positive or good feelings about. And also being motivated by things that inspire her, which is related to her FI. And then with her TE, being motivated to achieve things and even being loving seeing others achieve things and accomplishing things and meeting her goals. And then with her introverted intuition, being motivated by having a purpose or a direction to something, and sometimes needing a little help with that from the outside, but still really needing that to feel motivated. So it can be really difficult to find your accurate type. And Aness and I are both pretty passionate about really helping people see the truth of the beauty of all of the types. And, you know, if you've just taken a test online, that can be a great starting point. And maybe you are one of the people who the test came up with your accurate type. But by and large, more people than not have a hard time understanding the cognitive functions, seeing them in themselves, and even accurately reporting themselves to a test. And tests are static, so they can't ask you additional follow-up questions. And, you know, these things are true for so many of us. We have our own filters through which we view the world. And we also have our own way of viewing ourselves. Some of the stories we have about ourselves can keep us from finding our accurate type even. And I know that was true for me. And if you want to hear more about that, you can go way back to season 1, episode 3, where I share my mistyping journey in this system. So if you'd like to clarify your personality type in this system to understand how your brain is wired, let's work together. Working together will help you see yourself clearly in this system. And you can go to hellopersonality.com/16types, all together, that's 16 types, to complete an application to work together. I look forward to seeing if we're a good match. And just a quick side note before we wrap up, if you have questions about this interview or this type or anything that you've heard about in the 16 type system, I'd love to answer your questions on the podcast. You can submit your questions at hellopersonality.com/podcast and use the little pop-up window that will appear on that page to submit your questions. And I will answer them in the final episode of this season, episode 12. Now, coming up on the next episode, we'll meet an ISFP to learn about her journey of finding her type and her experiences with motivation. I'll see you then. Take care.